start. This week's Torah Away has been sponsored by Family Stimler, Lichvot Simchas and Nishuim, Shel Josh Morris and Michelle Stimler. Kof Gimel Adar Sheni, Tuesday the 29th of March, Dr. Sholem Springer, The Subtlety of Midvar Sheker Tirchok.
Good morning, gentlemen. You might think there's nothing subtle about Midvar Sheker Tirchok. We'll come to that subject towards the end. We have another number of issues to settle beforehand. Let me just tell you where the Sheer comes from, because actually I'm not too sure myself. The reason being that you will find this Sheer more or less in the Lev Eliyahu by Rav Elie Lapin, and you will also find it in the Oye Yohel Chelek Gimel, that is Rav Lev Chassman. And it seems that the answer to this little riddle, the fact that you find this Sheer in both places, and more or less, it's almost identical, is that Rav Shlomo Shvadron had a hand in compiling both these Sforim. Now, whether he got muddled, I don't know, or whether for some reason or other something got copied in the wrong place, I'm not sure. So we don't really know who the author is. It could be Rav Elie Lapin, it could be Rav Lev Chassman. Anyway, either way, they say good stuff. So let's begin. We begin with a story in Melachim where Eliyahu is in conversation with Achav. And it says in the Pasuk, Vayomer Eliyahu el Achav, Chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael, he makes a shvua, Asher madati lefonov, im yeh hashonim o'ele tanumota. So Eliyahu says to Achav that I promise you, I make a shvua that the land is going to suffer a famine, it's going to suffer a drought, and in fact this is what happens over the next 3 years. Now the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and of course the whole parsha there in Melochim, gives us the history of what made Eliyahu come out with this outburst. The shvua was made by Eliyahu when Eliyahu and Achav went to be Menachem Ovel Chiel. Now, Chiel was one of the Chashuvei Klal Yisrael, and he decided to rebuild Yericho. Yericho was under a cherem of Yehoshua ben Nun. No one was meant to be rebuild it. And Chiel decided to rebuild it, and he suffered terrible loss. All his sons died. We shall see in the Pasuk. Let's have a look at this background. V'yom Eliyahu, the Pasuk I've just read, Chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael Asher Amadati Lefonov Im Yeh Ashonim Ba'Eile Talamoto V'Omach Chazal Ki Shvu Azu Nishba Eliyahu B'Shor Shebo Hu V'Achov L'Nachem Eschiel Shebono Es Yerichoi. This Shvu was made at the time that Eliyahu and Achav were in conversation together, where they were going towards Chiel and they were going to be Menachem Ovel V'Kovos Avenu Achroin Mikol Bonov K'Kilulos Yehoshua. And this complied with the klal of Yehoshua, and Achav asked Eliyahu a question. Omar loy Achav le Eliyahu, heich efsher shekilulas ha-talmid niskaimo. How is it possible that the klal of the Talmid, that is Yehoshua, that's niskaim, look, we're going towards Chiel, and we're going to be Menachem Ovon Chiel, the kilulas ha-rav loy niskaimo, but the klal of the Rebbe of Yehoshua, who was Moshe Rabbeinu, loy niskaimo. Shari Moshe Rabbi Shal Yehoshua Omar Vasartim Vavadatim Elohim Achirim. And if one worships Avodah the Zorah, then the result will be Va'otzas Hashemayim V'lo Yimoto, that there'll be a drought. So we say it every morning, yeah? 3 times a day, we say Shema. Va'otzas Hashemayim V'lo Yimoto. That is the clone of Moshe Rabbeinu, that is person who worships Avodah the Zorah. The result is a drought, the result is famine. V'hu the Israel, Ovdim Avodah Zorah. Now, I, Achav, and the whole Klal Yisrael are actually indulging in very heavy Avodah Zorah. We had been all over the place. Achav became Yorda Moto Harbe, we're getting lots of rain. Ad, so much rain, in fact. Shimis Akev Lo Leches Lebes Avodah Zorah Mnei Hageshem. We can't get to our temples of Avodah Zorah because of the rain. So, it's exactly the opposite. Far from having a drought, far from having a lack of abundance of crops, we are getting kol tov, everything's going extremely well, and nevertheless Moshe Rabbeinu, yet Yehoshua made a klola in Yerichai, and this chiel builds it up, and the klola of the Talmud seems to be niskaim, and the klola of the Rebbe is not niskaim. Possible shot. Okay, so under those circumstances, when Achav issued such a challenge, that's when Eliyahu said, right, there's going to be no rain. Okay, challenge us, challenge me, and I am the messenger of the Rabbeinu Shalom, there will be no rain. Now, we move on to the third year of this famine, and the Rabbeinu Shalom commands Eliyahu to demonstrate to Klal Yisrael that, firstly, the rain is coming, and also it should be done by means of the famous contest between the priests of Baal and Eliyahu HaNavi. Everyone knows the story, let's briefly recap. Each one, each side, builds a Mizbeach, and Eliyahu puts his korban on the Mizbeach and soaks it with gallons and gallons of water, the Pasuk describes. Not only does he soak the korban, but all the surrounding bits of land he soaks as well. And, of course, the priests of Baal do exactly the same, or they at least put their korban on the Mizbeach. And this is a competition. And Eliyahu goads the people of Baal to start off, you know, bring your fire down. Of course they don't. And in the end, Eliyahu brings this fire down, and not only, says the Pasuk, does it consume the korban, but the whole of the Mizbeach, and also it scorches all the land around, everything vaporizes completely. It is a fire of monumental proportions. And Klal Yisrael say at the end of all that, Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem hu Elokim. So that is the demonstration that Eliyahu performs. And then after that, when they come over to Eliyahu's side, then the rain comes down. Now, the Mephoshim asks the following question. If Eliyahu could perform such a miracle, that would transform Klal Yisrael from being Oved Avodah Zarah to being Ne'amonim, to being Maminim, why couldn't you have done it 3 years early? You have to wait 3 years of famine, etc. And why did they have to starve? And no doubt many people died. And in fact, the Kodesh Baruch Hu complained to some extent. Remember, Eliyahu's intention was that Klal Yisrael should do teshuvah. So if he had a means, a method, a technique of getting them to do teshuvah by this competition with the priests of Baal, why didn't he do it earlier? Why do you have to go through the whole process of the drought, the famine, etc.? We could have had it sooner. And the answer actually is quite simple. Rav Elia, or whoever is giving the shir, said that if everything is going well, if everything is going well for a person, Hashem is wealthy, he's healthy, everything is nice, the business is thriving, it's very, very hard to convince a person to change his lifestyle. Because if everything is good, everything is slotting into place, and life is in order, and you tell this person that, you know, your life is not really in order, you ought to be doing something else, you ought to be doing a tshuva, you're a sinner, etc. A person like that is not going to listen. Because life seems okay. It's very hard to move a person under those circumstances. And even if a person knows intellectually that things are not in order in the spiritual domain, you can act as if one is two people. In one time, in one place, I am like this, and in another place, I'm like that. And as if you're two separate people, where one of these people doesn't listen to the other person at all. Gufim nifrodim. As if one is sort of, two separate people acting completely unmindful of the other. So it's possible that one might get very impressed momentarily by some sort of miracle. But in fact, after time, you know, it won't make any difference. Interestingly enough, one of the Mephoshim explains the following. In connection with that story, it's not really directly involving what we're talking about, but it has a peripheral connection. In that story of Eliyahu and Achav, we have that Izebel sends a message to Eliyahu that tomorrow I'm going to kill you. Now, she's got a revolution on her hands. She has a problem. All of a sudden, Klal Yisrael is saying, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim, you know, there's a revolution. I won't make any sort of comparisons with modern day, what's happening in Libya, Gaddafi, etc. All of a sudden, the people are revolting. So she sends Eliyahu, I'm going to kill you tomorrow. Why not today? Nip it in the bud. Yeah, settle him today. Go and send the soldiers.
Why should she tell him?
Well, I should tell. Sharp, powerful she is. You know, I'm going to do it and I'll carry it out. But why not today? If you've got a problem on your hands, settle it now. And the Foshim says as follows, a very nice vault. That today, Eliyahu, you're a hero. Yeah, you've just done this wonderful miracle. Okay, the fire came down from heaven, all the people saw it, Hashem Elokim, I can't touch you. Today the people will form a ring round you, I can't get any money. Tomorrow they'll have forgotten, it'll have faded, I'll be back in power, I'll be back in the saddle, and tomorrow I'll get you. And this is the point, this is the influence of miracles, it's temporary. And the Rambam says, Taka, that anyone whose religion is based on miracles, it is in fact terribly insecure. We only have miracles to rely on. Miracles fade in the mind. There are other things that underpin our yahadus, our religion. They're not miracles. Miracles help, but miracles are not the foundation of our emunah. Let's get back to our subject. So it's very hard to move a person who is feeling good and feeling well and life is, everything's wonderful. There's a lovely story about this Rav who was making money, trying to make money, for a lady who was a widow, and she had a lot of children, and there were holes in the roof, and it was a bitterly cold winter, and the wind was whistling through the roof from one side, and exiting through a broken window on the other side, and everyone was freezing and starving, and this Rav was trying to make money for this lady. And he knocks on the door of a wealthy man, and the wealthy man opens the door, and it's absolutely icy wind, and he sort of wraps himself up and says to the Rav, Come in. He says, the Rav says, no, thank you. You come out here. You know, it's bitterly cold. Come out here, he says. Anyway, there he talks and explains that the window, the wind, etc., the icicles of the window. And the man says, come in, I'll give you a good check. Yeah. And he goes in and he gives him a lovely check. And he says, Rabbi, well, why couldn't we have discussed it here instead of dragging me outside? And the Rabbi says, it's exactly the point. I need you to feel the pain. Unless you actually feel the pain, you know, your sympathy will be limited. When you come outside and the wind is whistling through your lovely overcoat, then you'll feel, and therefore your nesina will be that much better, that much greater. Leib nishbar v'nidche elokim loy sivaze. So that's the Pasuk says in Tehillim that a person who has a broken heart, a person who is suffering, he won't choose that moment to be mevaza the Ribbono Shloim. We need the pain to be moved. That, of course, is the answer to why Eliyahu waited 3 years, in order that they should suffer the starvation and the drought, and only then can he start talking to them, showing them the miracle, Hashem hu elokim. Now, let's get back to something that we mentioned, which was the question of Achav. Why does the curse of Moshe Rabbeinu not seem to work, and the curse of Yeshua does work? You know, why is it that we have this sort of contradiction? It was a very good question that Achav asked. And the answer that Rav Elia gives, bringing in other Meforshim, and by the way, Rav Kesim of America has a wonderful shiur on Lashon Hara, which I will sort of summarize, because the principles are the same. How is it that we don't have the klola working when it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu in this particular instance, and yet the klola of Yeshua did work? And he explains that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world with certain rules and systems, just like you have in the physical world, you have nature and you have rules of nature, and the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world in that way. So in the sphere of Ruchnius there are also rules. And one of the rules is that in order for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to examine our deeds, in order for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take action against us when we deserve action taken against us, there must be a kitruk, there must be an accusation that comes from another source. And if there's no accusation, then there's no din. It works like this, that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world with midas hadin. And you know the Pasuk says in Parshas Bolot, Lo hibit oven b'Yaakov v'lo yiro omol b'Yisroel. That's what Bilam said. That was one of the brachas for Klal Yisroel. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't deal with us all the time to punish us and to look at us and examine us and put us under a microscope. Lo hibit oven b'Yaakov, he doesn't want to see the oven, the averus of Klal Yisroel. He tries to hide himself so to speak, from the Averis of Yaakov. Lohibit Ovem B'Yaakov, Lohiro Omo B'Yisrael. Instead, he hands it over to a Pamalia Shamala, to a heavenly court. You go and judge them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu reserves his judgment for Rosh Hashanah and Kippur for special times. But otherwise, the heavenly court, they deal with Klal Yisrael. Now, that heavenly court has got rules. And the rules are, just like a court on earth, just like a court b'tachtonim, you have a prosecutor, you have a defending counsel, and the prosecutor's got to get up, and he's got to give a speech about our individual actions, and under those circumstances, if there is a successful prosecution, then the rest follows, which is conviction, etc., and punishment. In fact, Chazal tell us that the prosecutor, who is the Soton, is the same malach as the Yetzer Hara, who is the same malach as the Malach Mavis. He has got the job to try and inveigle us into doing a vereira, and then prosecutes us in court in the Pamal Shemara, and he is the same one that actually carries out the sentence, not necessarily death, or other things that we would be sentenced as a result of our actions. But there is a procedure in Pamal Shemara, and the Rabbeinu Shalom created the world, Amidas Adin, which means, in a nutshell, that if I do something, if I do A, there is a consequence B. Something else happens as a result of something that I do, there are consequences. That's what Midas Adin means. So I have to gevult. Din means that there are consequences. There is a system. But not only are there consequences, and not only is there something that happens which is B because of what I did, which was A, but the fact is, midah keneged midah as well. What happens as a result of my actions reflect my actions in the first place. So, the explanation is as follows. That what is this kitruk, what is this accusation that must happen in order that I can be indicted in the Pamalia Shalmala for an avera? And the answer is, it's Lashon Hara, or Dilturim. It's reporting on others, speaking about others. And it works like this. Because the system works on the basis of Midas Adin, and in particular, Midah Keneged Midah, the prosecuting counsel in Pamali Shalmalo has got to get up and he's got to speak about me. So what he's actually doing is telling Lashon Hara. That's his job. His job is to speak bad about me. Now, Lashon Hara is things that are true, but are detrimental to me. That's the job of the prosecutor. But because of Midah Keneged Midah, he can only do so if I've been speaking Lashon Hara. And if I haven't been speaking Lashon Hara, his mouth is closed. He can't mount a prosecution. That's why Lashon Hara is so powerful, disproportionate to the fact that, okay, I've done an Avera, another Avera, but why is Lashon Hara blown up into something, you know, so powerful? Another shear. I'll expand on it, perhaps. But that's the principle. That unless there is some accusation from another source, which is Lashon Hara, the prosecutor cannot mount an attack, and therefore my avail is never dealt with until a Kodesh Prophet gets around to doing it at the right time. Meantime, I'm protected. And in fact, so this is the explanation of what we have here, that Doiro Shalachov, the Doiro that we're talking about, Afal Pisha Hoya Ovdei Avodah Zorah, B'chol Zeh Hoya Yoidim M'chom Avonotzim. Achov was king for 40 years. And whenever he waged a war, not all the wars are decisive, of course, you have skirmishes, etc. He went to war umpteen times, and he always won. He always won his wars. Rosha that he was, Ovid Avodah Zorah that he was, Machias Rabbim that he was, he always won his wars. And why? Shaloi Hoya Beinehem Dilturim. They didn't have anybody that reported on each other. They were very good about that. They did lots of Averis, but they didn't speak Lashon Hara. On the other hand, we have that when Shaul, when David was on the run from Shaul, everybody reported on David and they spoke Lashon Hara, and there was Lashon Hara in Klal Yisrael, although at the time of Shaul, Torah was something that each child knew 24 pshatim on every single possum. They had wonderful Torah, but because there were Dilturim, because there was always this accusation in the background, the prosecutor had lots to say. Always had lots to say. So this is the system, and therefore, that's what protected them. So when Achav asked the question, the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu's klala didn't work was because there were no Dilturim, and therefore he was protected from all these punishments until...
Which klala did not work, Moshe?
Moshe Rabbeinu, ba'otza, sashmayim v'lo yemotov. We say every single day, that when we were to basalte v'altim l'him acherim, There'll be no rain. No, Achav says, what do you mean? I'm worshiping before Israel every single day, and we're trying to tread through the mud to get to our temples, and the rain is actually stopping us. So, you know, there's no... Yeah, that's the point. So, Eliyahu starved the people. Eliyahu conducted this 3 years of famine, and because the nest wouldn't work unless they were, so to speak, separated from everything physical, from feeling good about themselves, and that they wouldn't have taken any tochacha from Eliyahu. And the best example is this gentleman, Chiel, who we were talking about before, that Eliyahu and Achav were going to visit, that he had just buried his last son. And at the beginning, his first son died when he put the cornerstone to the city. When he actually laid the foundation stone of the city, his Mechaya died. And the Pasuk says how when he was just hanging the gates, he'd finished the whole project. He was hanging the gates of the city, his last son died. And all his sons died during the whole project. And he didn't take any notice. He didn't connect somehow the fact that he was being punished in this terrible way and the fact he was violating Yeshua's Chayrim. That is the nature of a person, that sometimes we don't take notice because things are going well for us. We think things are going well for us in one area and we do not connect something in another area. Yedias ha-seichel eino siba klal la-argoshas alev. Sometimes our intellect is not in gear with our hargosha. And they are disconnected. And therefore, a person can act in a certain way. Intellectually, he may know something, but somehow it doesn't seep into his heart. That's why Achiel didn't change. He didn't connect the fact that death of his children was, in fact, a consequence of his actions against the Chayrim of Yehoshua. Pattern of history is like that. When the going is good, we will not listen to change. Bring famine, then things are likely to change. And indeed, they ended up saying, Hashem hu elokim, Hashem hu elokim. Now, the title of this shiur was something to do with Midvar Sheker Tirchok. So let's now connect this. We think Midvar Sheker Tirchok means when somebody tells a lie, you know, a real lie, that's a lie, and therefore Midvar Sheker Tirchok, we should avoid doing that. Listen to Gemara in Shavuos. Minayin l'shnayim shebo l'din. Echad lavush samartutin. Two people come to a din Torah. One is dressed in rags, shmatas, samatutin. Ve'echad lavash itztelis ve'esmeh mono. And when the other person's got this wonderful garment on, costs meh mono, that the dayan's got to say to these people, lavash kamoisoi. Turns to the rich man, lavash kamoisoi. Or helbisha kamoisko. Or dress him in the same rich clothes as you. How do we know that? Talmud loyme, mitvah, sheker, tirch. So the dayan sees two people come in, one's rich, one's poor, one looks rich, one looks poor, he's got to change his clothes. He actually went through those motions of telling the people to change clothes, so that I shouldn't turn to you and favour you, that I will not listen to counter arguments against you because of your chashivus. So the question is this: the Dayanim are instructed in all sorts of ways in the Torah that they should conduct a din Torah. Rich and poor, doesn't matter. And it says, Lo sekir ponim b'mishpat, Lo segurim ibneish, Lo satem mishpat, evyon chavarivoy. Lots of different commandments in the Torah of how to deal with a case that involves a rich man and a poor man. And because they walk in their rich clothes and poor clothes, everything all of a sudden changes. All of a sudden, they're not allowed to be done the din. What's changed? All they're doing is wearing different clothes. The Torah has already trusted these Dayanim that the Torah didn't say, you mustn't take a case where there's rich man and poor man. You may deal with such a case under the rules that I've just read out. But why does the fact that they look rich and look poor change everything? What's all the fuss about? So, if they pop out now, and they change clothes, either they both walk in rags, or they both walk in rich clothes, then it's all right. Now, you really think that the dayan doesn't know who's rich and who's poor? They look out at the two balei dinim, and they know precisely who's the rich man and who's the poor man. All right, they're both standing there in rags. But, you know, it's just almost a charade. So what's going on here? But the principle that we've established in the early part of the shiur is the same. We conclude, the idea has not changed. They know exactly who's rich and who's poor, and who they're facing. And as far as that's concerned, in the intellect, they understand that perfectly. They have now got to deal with the Din Torah. And if you're dealing with the Din Torah, that means they've got to think about the issues of law. And so they look out at these two people, and okay, so one's rich, one's poor, that's something that they know intellectually. So they can set aside that idea for a moment while they're thinking about the law. The mind can only really deal with one thing at a time, and they're thinking about the din, therefore they won't be thinking about the fact that this man's rich, this man's poor. However, if the fact that they're rich and poor is demonstrated moment by moment by the fact that he's got rich clothes and he's got poor clothes, then that means you're getting information through another route. You're actually looking at it. And therefore the mind may be thinking about the din, but the eye sees rich, poor. And that, therefore, you cannot get rid of. You can't get rid of that image, and therefore, whether you like it or not, it will be taken into consideration, and therefore that will influence the way one thinks. So as long as it's machshava, as long as I know that one's rich and poor, I can deal with that. The Torah allows a dayan to deal with that. But if I actually see it in front of my eyes, then it makes it very different. And therefore, I cannot disconnect the fact that that is what I'm seeing. So even though the seichel knows that I will subvert the seichel, gal einai va'abito niflos b'toyra seichel. So gal einai, that we're asking that our eye should see the niflos b'toyrechel in a positive way, and this can also work in a negative way. Remember, we're talking about dayonim, who are tzaddikim, and honest people. And yet, Torah says, through the interpretation of the Gemara, that you can be influenced by what the eye sees, b'shas they're doing a din Torah. So if they fail to do this, if they fail to make the Balei Dinim change their clothes, then the Dayanim are over on Midvar Sheke Tirchak. That's the Chiddush. That they're doing everything right, according to the book, so to speak. But because they are allowing themselves to be influenced by something their eye sees, that's an extension of our normal understanding of Midvar Sheke Tirchak. Telling a lie, they're not telling any lies. But they're allowing themselves to be influenced by something that they shouldn't be influenced by. Clothes. And Rebbe says we do the same. In fact, two people come into our shul. One's looking very choshev and smart and nice trimmed beard and nice clothes. And one, you know, looks a schlepper. Let's put it, you know. Who do you go and say shalom aleichem to? Yeah, the choshev person, you leave him to the front perhaps. And the schlepper, what have you done? You've made your decision and conclusion on the basis of clothes. That's all one's done, on outward appearances. That's mitvah sheke tirchok. How do you know? Maybe the one who looks like a schlepper has a belt slump. How do you know? You don't know. So we make our judgments very often on the wrong thing. And in order to get the two tying together, we need to have our intellect and our lave working in conjunction with each other. One, so to speak, has to feel the pain of the other. And if we have them separated, that means that the eye makes judgments on what it sees. But, in fact, the mind has no influence on that. But the mind is influenced by what the eye sees. Then we go through our day making judgments based on the wrong thing. And that, too, comes under the umbrella, comes under the ambit of Midvar Sheke Tirchak. My time's run out. So I wish you all a kosher Pesach and all the best in all your endeavours.